The captain spent his days in punctilious attention to the ship, pacing off the quarterdeck from wheel to rail, from rail to wheel, ever alert to some disorder to correct. If his eyes were not upon the sails, they were upon the ropes and spars. If not upon those, they rested on the decking. It was just as he had warned me. The crew was prone to laxness. But, since he had the responsibility of the ship, not they, he was forced, with constant surveillance and commands, to bring discipline to their work. Things I never would have thought important, he could find at grievous fault. From tarnish upon a rail to limp sails and ragged spars, whether it was rigging to be overhauled or new tar to be applied, blocks, tackle, shrouds, each and all were forever in want of repair. Decks had to be holystoned, caulked, and scrubbed anew. The bow scraped and scraped again, the figurehead repainted. In short, under his keen eye, everything was kept in perfect order. For this, all hands would be called sometimes, more than twice a watch. I heard the calls even at night. Indeed, so mindful was the captain's sense of responsibility toward the ship, my father's firm, as he was wont to remind me, that no man on watch was ever allowed to do nothing, but was kept at work. "You are not paid to be idle," the captain often declared, and he, setting an example, was never slack in his duty. Even at our teas he was vigilant, again so like my father, and patiently examined me as to what I had seen, heard, or even thought, always ready with quick and wise correction. He was not so patient with the first and second mates, to whom he gave all his orders, depending upon whose watch it was. These men, Mr. Hollybrass and Mr. Keech, were as different from the captain as from each other. Mr. Keech, when summoned, would scuttle quickly to his side, nervous, agitated, that look of fear forever about him, and absorb the captain's barked orders with a cringing servility. Mr. Hollybrass, the first mate, would approach slowly, seeming to take his own silent soundings about the captain's demands. He might lift his shaggy eyebrows as if to object, but I never heard him actually contradict the captain in words. Indeed, the captain would only repeat his commands, and then Mr. Hollybrass would obey. "Have Mr. Dillingham redo the futtock shrouds," he'd say, or, "Get Mr. Foley to set the fore gaff topsail proper," or again, "Have Mr. Morgan set that main clew garnet to rights." The men of the crew, hardly finished with one task, would have to set about another, though they did so with dark looks and not so silent oaths. The captain, gentleman that he was, appeared to take no notice. But more than once I watched him call upon Mr. Hollybrass, or less often Mr. Keech, to punish a man for some slackness or slowness I could not detect. If provoked sufficiently, the captain might resort to a push or a slap with his own open hand. And, much to my surprise, I saw him strike Morgan, a short, stocky, squinty-eyed monkey of a man, with a belaying pin, one of the heavy wood dowels used to secure a rigging rope to the pin rail. In dismay, I averted my eyes. The fellow was tardy about reefing a sail, the captain said, and went on to catalogue further likely threats. Confinement in the brig, salary docking, no meals, lashings, duckings in the cold sea, or even keel-hauling, which, as I learned, meant pulling a man from one side of the ship to the other, underwater.